will submit it to the Board of Commissioners for their approval in the fourth quarter. So without going into that, Michael, I'll let you state where that's at and what we're doing.
As John said, I'm a member of the Road Improvement Advisory Committee, and we have this small technical advisory committee that's developing best management practices and roadside vegetation management plan. And why this is important is the county has over 1,400 road miles that it maintains, and or lane miles of roads, and the right-of-way goes anywhere from 20 feet from center line to a considerable distance beyond the ditch into the backslope. So there's a lot of land that the county maintains and that you folks work in. And the best management practices, the vegetation management plan that the county was working with was adopted in 2005. It basically dealt with herbicides, what chemicals you use where, and to deal with the edge of the road as well as to deal with invasive and noxious species in the backslopes and in other places. In 2015, as John said, the Board of Commissioners appointed this group of experts to update the management plan, but also to look at a lot of emerging issues. And the Habitat Conservation Plan is an example of one of those emerging issues that the county is required to pay attention to. Clearly, the safety of the traveling public is our most important concern. That's what our major focus is and will always continue to be. But controlling noxious and invasive plants is really important. You folks have a big part in that. Protecting certain plants and plant communities, and Rich will talk more about that. Minimizing impacts to water quality and looking for ways to partner with others to be more efficient with what we do and more cost-effective in how we maintain our roadsides. We're also looking at ways to be more transparent with the public on what we do, when we do it, and how we do it. So, for instance, we will have a website that we'll establish, and it will have a list of when roadsides will be sprayed, where they'll be sprayed, so that people know what's going to be happening in their area. Anybody will be able to check in anytime they want to, as well as what they're going to be sprayed with, because people are very concerned with what happens to the roadside, particularly if there's specialty crops nearby. So the roadside vegetation management plan has a policy, it has several goals, and it has a whole lot of best management practices. We recognize that these are not, this is what you have to do. We recognize that there are trade-offs that have to be made. You could do this or you could do this, but these are things to consider. So it's giving you things to think about when you're working within the right-of-way in ways you can have minimum impact to not only the traveling public, but to the natural systems, and still be able to get your work done and do the things that you need to do. So the best management practices, the BMTs, they address brush cutting, mowing, tree and brush removal, spraying what you can spray, when and where. The water quality, I'm not going to go through these in detail. I'm just going to hit just a few ideas because you have this in front of you. But the water quality BMPs address working near water bodies, obviously. Tells you how far you have to be to work on equipment, repair, refuel, clear brush, maintaining stable stream banks, making sure you maintain brush that shades the water so that the species in the water that need cooler areas are not impacted by the work that you do or that we do. Working around culverts and bridges. And this isn't just near rivers and streams. This is also wetlands, major drainage routes, anything that carries a volume of water that's going to be carrying potential sedimentation or materials that we don't want carried into our major waterways. Wildlife BMPs, we talk about not working in brush areas when you have major nesting seasons for migratory bird species. And if you do need to work in those periods, make sure that there are not birds nesting in those areas and avoid them if they are. And we're going to try and come up with a list of species experts that you'd be able to contact if you need a resource to help you work through where there might be some nesting areas. And that's not just birds in the trees, birds in the brush, as well as ground nesters. native plants and plant communities, and again, Rich will talk a lot about that, but one of the things that we're hoping to do over the next couple of years is inventory the county roads and identify areas where there are unique plant communities. Yamhill County has some really valuable remnant prairie habitats in our back slopes, and some of these are fairly large and fairly impressive. So we want to identify those, and those will become special maintenance zones that will also be marked, just like the Fenner's Blue Butterfly Lupin that Rich will talk about, are marked, so that special plans will be put together on how you work in those areas. They're not intended to be onerous. They're just intended to make sure that we're dealing with our natural systems in a positive way and living with those other folks that live out there all the time. Some of the more important BMPs deal with invasive plants and noxious weeds. The county is really concerned about preventing our roads from serving as corridors for the spread of noxious weeds and invasive plants, and that's a really easy thing to do. If you're putting a trench, you're going to drag all the seeds and vegetation with you the whole length of the trench that you're putting in or maintaining it. An example of one of our invasive species that we're concerned about is garlic mustard was found on Parrot Mountain this spring by a local resident, and that is an incredibly invasive species. Our adjacent counties, Clackamas, Washington counties, are spending a lot of money trying to control garlic mustard. It's not in Yamhill County yet. So the county public works department put a lot of effort into eradicating that before it has a chance to become established. However, if you work in an area like that has tiny, tiny seeds, you can take a tiny bit of the plant. If you take it with you, it will go with you and populate some other location. So it's really easy when you are working, and we want to identify these areas where we have invasive species of concern. It's really easy to carry a broom or a blower in your vehicle. And if you're working in one of these areas, clean your wheels, clean your wheel wells, clean your clothes. Pant cuffs are terrible for dragging stuff around. Don't wear pant cuffs if you don't have to, but at least clean them out before you leave an area that has invasive species in there. That's one that's really important. There's some good BMPs in there for you to look at. This is the vegetation management plan. It's pretty brief. You're the first ones to get a chance to look at this. Feel free to read through it. If you have suggestions on how it can be better, if you have suggestions on how it could be made less onerous for you or more effective for you, make sure you let John know. But this is going to be ready to go out to public review, as John said, in another month or so. And the companion document, Yamhill County Public Works Department Priority Noxious and Weeds and Invasive Plants, lists the 9 plants that the county has identified as those that are most of concern along the roadside. Some are invasive, some are not, but it lists why it's a concern, a picture of the plant for you, and mechanical and chemical ways to take care of it. So these are all going to be on our website very soon. You get the first chance to look at these. Feel free to give us comments. We're looking for feedback on how to make this an effective program that works for everybody that works in the county. So that.
As Michael stated there, as far as your feedback, it is warranted. I mean, you need to take a look at those best practices and see if there's some way that we're missing something, some improvement, something that is onerous to you that you cannot do. Right now, what Public Works will be doing is in these areas that we identify that these invasive species, especially the garlic mustard, as Michael had talked about, we will take an air blower, one of these still garden blowers, if you would, weed blowers or leaf blowers, and we will blow our equipment off after we're done working in that area. Now, the last time we did work up in Irwin where we have found that infestation, we actually took a water truck up and washed our equipment before we left that area. So these, as we go through, are going to be implemented. As I said, it's draft form now. You have an opportunity to put your input into it. When it goes to the board, it will become a board order. We will require all agencies working in our right-of-way to adhere to these best practices. So I would encourage you to have you or your peers take a look at it and see if there's something that we should be doing different than what we're spelling out.
any questions?
Is there a deadline for those comments? What would be best scheduled to get comments in?
Well, always, the sooner the better is always nice. But as John said, this has not gone for public review yet, so that will probably be at least a month to two for public review. And it's not going to be out for at least another month or more. So you have a couple months. And we'll probably get it right up in the paper so that people, it'll be in the local papers to let people know that you have this as a policy for the county. And it'll be on the county's website, so you'll be able to access it as well.
What the process for that will happen is that the Road Improvement Advisory Group meets second Thursday of each month. And so the Vegetation Committee will present that to them. That is a public meeting. If you wish, you can attend that meeting. It's at 7 o'clock here in the conference room right across from us here. We probably, and have not decided yet, to do an open house as far as implementation of it, but at the BOC, at the board level, there will be time there for public input, too. What they'll do is they'll hear it on a Monday that will be their informal session. After the informal, it will probably be brought over to the next Thursday, which is a formal session, and that's where they would implement the board if they elect to.
Any questions? Are you good? I know. I'm worried that poll just from the hunters.
Oh, we have one if you want to use it.
I'm not getting anything. It came on and now it's not on. I'm showing the power. There's no issue with power, right? Yeah, I can talk about it.
The power company here?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. I'm going to do this.
Are you sure that's true?
It was on. It was coming and then it just, like, stopped.
And off some questions are, have you encountered these in other counties, the best practices, or?
Oh, wait, here, it's coming out.
I got a question on that road in Western St. You had mentioned Irwood Road. That's not too far from my area there in Newburgh. Is it pretty contained, that small area?
That's the only population that we've identified so far.
Okay. And that's in Washington County?
No, it's in Yamhill.
It is in
Yamhill. It's just right over the line. Okay. But there's a retired BLM botanist that was right near the population that was found. She's the one that found it. And so she was pretty instrumental in helping the county figure out what to do about it and make sure that it doesn't continue. So Steve, our
vegetation
guy from the county, went out and did a lot of work to make sure it's eradicated. So we're pretty confident we got it. But it can be really expensive.
And it is in other counties right now. I would imagine Washington County, it is, and I'm not sure how they're handling it.
That's just pretty close to the line. That's why I wonder.
Yeah. It's in Washington, it's in Clackamas, and that's where I'm sure it came from.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because if we get a map of areas in North counties, if they would want to share that information, if they have, so
there you go.
It could be useful.
Well, Soil and Water Conservation District, one of the things we want to do is work with them because they have an invasive weed committee that meets every year. So we want to be able to put together a map that shows where the major known sites are and GPS those sites so they would be on a map just like the HCP sites are. So if we could do that, that would be very useful.
Some of our projects, Earlwood next year, more than likely will be paved, so you'll see a lot of herbs moving up there, and we'll take all the precautions when we get up there as far as washing our machinery, trying to identify and if it's feasible to spray. You'll see us working Parrot Mountain next year quite a bit. There's about 4 miles that we're going to be doing gravel road improvements or overlays up in that area.
John, I have a question that is sort of only related maybe in kind of worst case scenarios, but thinking about issues with water and light when we have pool testers come into the system and people are more aware and ask more questions about type of chemicals being used. One of the things that's been a little bit difficult, is the county going to be spending any time on monumentation in the roadways? Sometimes it's difficult to know where the right-of-way ends and private property begins. You know, when you're trying to talk to a customer about, no, this pole is on the back edge of the right-of-way, no, it's not, it's on my property, and, you know, there's a fence line that was built 300 years ago.
Yeah, and that's an excellent question, and I'll use Warden Hill as an example. I have George Fox University. Every year I give them a senior class project. 2 years ago, their senior class project was to identify the right-of-way on Warden Hill because we're going to take a gravel road and pave it. The conclusion was there is no right-of-way and that they could not, through all the research, find where the right-of-way would be identified. For the most part, we go by what we call prescriptive right-of-way, which means that if the road is there, it is the right-of-way. I would probably put as high as 80% of our road systems are not in the right designated right-of-way. And you folks see that all the time. And frankly, we use your system to identify our right-of-way, probably more because you're a little bit more concerned than we are, frankly, of where you're putting those poles. So we usually use your layout as what the right-of-way consists of. But no, and when you start looking at the right-of-way system throughout Yamhill County, as Michael had said, it goes anywhere from less than 40 all the way up to 120, and one individual road could have a 40, 60, and back to 120. I mean, Warden Hill is a prime example of that. As that road was developed, they must have come in when they went to the board. They petitioned for a 40-foot, and the next one petitioned for a 60. So it's very it's hard to work with, and I can imagine what you folks have to put up with as far as trying to research what the right-of-way is. Fairview, PG&E, I think, was the PG&E was just involved with that as far as a dispute on a right-of-way as we came into that project. So no, I hope I answered your question, but we really honestly do not know where our right-of-ways are. We use prescriptive more than we can use anything else. Rich?
Okay, I'm finally ready. I can't believe how long it took to get everything geared up, but I guess I should expect that. My name is Rich Schlapp. I'm with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and as was pointed out, I was involved with the development of the HCP, and what I'm going to be talking about is primarily about the HCP and how to avoid impacting the species, federal listed species that do occur in the highway right of way. So I have a couple questions. I'm curious. I think I heard everyone introduce themselves, and it sounds like we have some cable companies, and then electrical, and do we have any sewer water? Sewer or water? Water. Okay. So natural gas, is that? We got that too. Okay, we got everything almost. Am I missing anything that any of you work on that's located in the right of way? Is that pretty much it?
Tree trimming.
Yeah, okay, so but that's related to the power lines, usually, right?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So I'm glad you're all here. I will touch upon, you know, all of those areas that you do work in. So the other thing I want to mention is I'm not going to talk too much specifically about the biology per se. I'm really going to just briefly introduce the species that we're concerned about, and then really point out where we need to be more careful and things we can do to avoid impacting the these listed species that occur within very specific areas in the right-of-way in the Emerald County. Any questions? Okay, and then if you have questions during presentation, just raise your hand or whatever, that's fine. Okay, and then if, I don't know if I'm going to, oh, that doesn't look good. What happened? Okay, All right, so this is the HCP, and it is available online. I think it's probably on the county's website. It's also available on Fish and Wildlife Service website as well. So if you're interested in seeing it. So a lot of the basis, like I said, of this meeting is really about the HCP and addressing the listed species in the right-of-way. And here to talk about the federally listed species. We have two primary ones that are located in the right-of-way that the HCP covers. It's the Kincaid's lupin, which is a plant, and then the Fenner's blue butterfly. And the HCP was developed because those species were in the right-of-way and because we knew that the county, through routine maintenance activities of the road mostly, would potentially impact those species. So we're trying to figure out a way of trying to make sure that the important maintenance activities could continue to occur while minimizing impacts to these listed species that occur in the right-of-way. As a result of the HCP, the county did receive a permit from the Fish and Wildlife Service that allows some impacts to occur to those species. However, and part of the reason why you're here is that the permit does not cover your actions. It only covers actions that the county does or that the county specifically contracts for. Okay, so that's important to remember. And because of that, what I'm going to try to talk about mostly today is how to avoid the impact such that any of you working in the right-of-way don't do something that might harm the species, because if you harm the species, then you need a permit. And there may come a time when you do need a permit, and I'll talk to you about that too. Okay, so Fenner's blue butterfly, this is what they look like. We're not going to quiz you on IDing them or anything like that. You don't have to worry about that. But this is what they look like. This is bigger than life size, by the way. You know, they're only, you know, like that big. So they're really small. And also, the butterfly is associated in Yamhill County primarily with Kincaid's lupin. So, you know, that's the lupin plant in flower. You could see the typical, you know, lupin leaves, and, you know, there's a pair of Fenner's blue butterflies. But again, for the most part, you won't need to identify it, but in some cases, it might be a good thing, actually. And it's relatively easy to identify, but I'm not going to spend much time on that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the biology, because this is important. So the reason lupin is so important, it's not only federally listed, but the Fenner's blue butterfly larva, the caterpillar, feed exclusively on those lupin plants. They don't eat anything else. So if they don't have that, they cannot survive. So there are other lupin plants in the right-of-way that you might see. There's at least two or three other species, and some of them are quite abundant. But the Fenner's blue butterfly does not eat those. The larva does not eat those. So we're not really concerned about those. We're only concerned about the lupin in the right-of-way. The adults, just like many butterflies, feed on flowers. Okay, so we are also concerned the nectar from the flowers. So we also are concerned somewhat about the flowers that occur in close proximity, especially to the Kincaid's lupin. But the most important thing, really, is the lupin, because there's not a lot of lupin. There are a lot of wildflowers, both native and non-native, that occur in the right-of-way and outside the right-of-way. So lupin is really critical. It's probably the most limiting factor. So here, I just wanted to show you, and again, this is not life size, but and this is almost when they're ready to pupate, but there's a larva right there. So this is the base of a young lupin plant, and then that's a larva. And so that's a lot of times what they're going to be hanging out. They'll typically go up the plant. They might hang out in the plant. But I just wanted to show you that they do spend time down at the base of the plant, okay? And they're very small. Okay, so more about the biology. As you can see, okay, this, especially for the lupin or the butterfly, this is January through December. They are present throughout the entire year in one form or another. Okay, so let's start the adult butterfly. They are around. It depends on the weather, of course, but they are around maybe late April, definitely in May and into June. Okay, so the adults mate. They lay eggs. They lay eggs on the lupin plant. Okay, those eggs then hatch. So that would be June, July. The larva feed June, July, and then what they do is they crawl down to the base of the plant. Okay, so again, this is July. The larvae are at the base of the plant. They stay at the base of the plant. So if you follow this, so, you know, this diapause means sort of like hibernating. So they're at the base of the plant, August, September, October, November, December, January, February. Okay, and then they start actively feeding again in March. So they are there. They are there all year round. Okay. And then they eventually, you know, get big enough, pupate, and then they become adults. Okay, so it's real important to remember that they're there all the time. Any questions about that? Okay. All right, so I briefly touched upon this, but I'll just emphasize it again. You know, the Federal Endangered Species Act protects animals and plants. It does protect animals more than plants. Fenders is an animal. The plants, technically, federally listed plants in general, not specific to lupin, but you don't necessarily need a permit to impact a federally listed plant as far as the federal law is concerned, okay? There are state laws, and that's a whole different thing. But in general, I'm just saying you don't. However, because I mentioned earlier, the larva of fenders is solely dependent upon Kincaid's lupin. Therefore, if you affect the lupin, you affect the adult, you affect the animal, and that's what's regulated under the Endangered Species Act. So if you do need to negatively impact the fenders blue butterfly, you will need a permit. We're going to try to figure out a way of avoiding that. Okay? Everyone understand that? All right, so as you all, I'm sure, know, the right-of-way is quite varied in nature. There are, the road is paved or not paved, it's off, you know, it's heavily used, not heavily used. The right-of-way itself, it's mowed, it's flat, it's wide, it's short, it's got a deep ditch, a shallow ditch. There's lots of variation in the right-of-way. And in many cases, because of that, the butterfly, the lupin aren't going to be there. But there are different things that can be done under different circumstances if the Kincaid's lupin is there. Now I'm just going to show you some pictures. Just to show you the variety. So here's a lupin plant. Now, it's easy to see because of the flower. Okay, if the flower wasn't there, you know, you might have a hard time seeing that. Okay, and I'll show you another picture where you can't even see it at all. But this is a heavily vegetated area. Okay, they're not all like this. Here's another example. The background, you know, it's thick grass. And a lot of times the right-of-way does have a fence line. you know, designating where private property is versus where the right of way is. Now, here's the lupin plant. These flowers are a little bit older, but if you look down here, you can see young plants, okay? The other thing about lupin is it reproduces by seed, but also by underground roots. And so here, I don't know which this was produced by, but I just wanted to show you, they will grow in this kind of stuff. All right, but if you plow through that, then obviously they're not going to do very well. Here's another example of a right-of-way. This one's really steep on a gravel road, and you can see these little patches here and there. You know, something like this typically is not going to be impacted by most activities. But I did want to point out, see this tree here? It was cut, which is fine. But, you know, I'll show you, I'm going to talk about this slide again a little bit later. Here's another right way. This is at the end of a road. It's not heavily used. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of activities going on in here, at least not currently, but I guess, you know, if something breaks, you got to go in there and fix it and dig things up or what have you. But in this case, and it's hard to see, but there are lupin plants all around here. There are lupin plants over here, but there are no lupin plants over here or over here. That's the next thing I believe I'm going to talk about. And this is also another case of, you know, this is like 6 feet and then it drops down. And this is probably 50, 60 feet. Here's another example you could just barely see, but here's the lupin plant. This right away, you know, goes from there to the fence line, flat, it gets mowed. And this is one of those situations, this is why we did the HCP in part, because the county needs to maintain this gravel road, and the plant just decided it wants to keep on growing outwardly from the right of way into the road. And we understand the scenario, and the county needs to do the maintenance, so that's fine. But
can I say something?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Part of our charge on this HCP is to enhance the vegetation on that. So you will see us, as Rich said, mowing. If you look, and I believe that you have a timeline that our activities are accepted in those sensitive areas, and there's about a 3 or 4 month period that we actually do mow to enhance the flower. So you will see public works up there. And as far as like the last slide that you showed, the vegetation cover, you'll see us trying to, we work with a gentleman out of OSU, Paul Hammond, who is probably the most respected scientist as far as the Fender's Blue. He's under contract with us, so on a yearly basis, we go out with him, and there's 22 sites that this has been identified, and what we're doing is we're taking the high-profile ones, the ones with the butterfly present in them, and what we'll do is we'll cut some of that vegetation. As Rich's slide, the last one, showed, you can see that vegetation overhang. Some of our goal is to cut that out of there to enhance the area and to allow the lupin to spread more, which should be populated by more butterflies. So you will see our activity in some of those areas that you might have a question why we're doing something there. But every year we have best practices in those adaptive management to try to enhance those tall, the tall
bracket fern
that's out there. Now this year we'll see that we typically take like 25% of any particular area, and what we'll do is do this, and for the most part some of it actually is trial and error. What we're trying to do is to eliminate competing vegetation for that lupin. So you'll see us spray, you'll see us go up there with people and physically remove some invasive species.
Okay, so I went over this. I think I got everybody. I didn't mention Okay, so here's the other real important point that I wanted to make, and I'm going to talk about next, is that under the HCP, let me ask you this. Are you aware that there are special maintenance zones along the right-of-way? Who is aware? All right, so a lot of people aren't aware of that. All right, so those are the areas that have been identified as where the butterfly and or the lupin currently occur. Okay, those areas are, there's a map of those areas in the county's blue book, which you can get a copy of. Those areas are also identified in the HCP document, which
I believe
there's maps in the back. The maps
that we gave this morning, Rich.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so yes.
Is it possible to get shape files in those areas?
It is possible, yes.
Yeah, it would be.
Are the shape files on the website? I don't know if they are. Cardo can supply those because they're the ones that created them. So.
Yeah.
The lat longs are included in the blue book too, if you're interested. But that's more work to input those numbers. But I know they're included in the table in the blue book. But you could talk to the county getting that original.
And I'm sure that we can get those files for you. The reason my hesitation is Cardinal Hendrix actually developed the HCP for the county and was under contract for, 3 years to develop the HCP and the first phase of its implementation. Cardinal has been released, and now we are taking, as far as administration of this document, in-house, if you will. So we're doing it, but I'm sure Cardinal would release those files that you're looking for.
Okay, so related to that, so the map, is hard to, the map itself, and I'm going to show you a copy in a second, might be hard to precisely identify where the beginning and end is, because of the scale. But there is a sign, and it's bigger than this. This is the blue book. The sign shows the beginning and end of where these special maintenance zones are along the roadway. Okay, so if you look at the map, you can get really close. And then if you drive slow enough, hopefully you'll see these little signs there. Unfortunately, some of them get missing every once in a while, and they need to be replaced. But that's for you to be aware of. If you don't need a GPS or anything necessarily to identify the beginning and end of these special maintenance zones.
Now, see, the county-owned equipment, we have a system, this GPS, that longitude latitude is entered into. When one of our mowers or brush cutters enters one of these, it clearly tells them that they're in a sensitive area and that they're not to be doing that type of activity in there. And I'm not so sure that, that type of thing is what we've implemented to keep us out of those or to avoid having any. Now, you might ask, well, why are the signs? The signs are actually about a foot by 4 inches, I'm going to say, maybe a little bit. 14 by 4 inches. The signs were put up there for a reason to be that small, is that at the beginning of this, it was a very sensitive topic for all the residents. We really did not want everybody to see where those were and fear that they would do some harm to those plants or to the species themselves. We do try to keep those mowed out. We do pay attention to them as Rich said. If they're missing, we replace them. But that's probably your best bet is to look for those.
Okay, so I don't know. You just talked to the county.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I guess from my perspective, I'm more CPE. But just wanted to make
comments, so I mean, yes, you have every right to, for those files.
Okay, so so as far as addressing issues in the right way, obviously the Public Works Department, the Blue Book, and HCP, it's not, you don't need to read the whole HCP for sure. Blue Book is a nice handy dandy quick reference to these particular areas, again, the special maintenance zones, where you need to be careful. Okay, so currently there's 22 of them, and all of them have presence of Kincaid's lupin, but only 7 have the Fender's blue butterfly. Okay, so remember that, you know, and again, I'm speaking, today's presentation is really about avoiding the impacts to specifically the Fender's blue butterfly, because if you impact the butterfly, you might be departed from us, okay? So there are other impacts that are okay, because you won't need a permit under the federal ESA, okay? So 7 sites have the presence of Fender's blue. That means you need to be particularly careful within those 7 sites, okay, within those.
Can I expand on that, though?
Sure.
And again, I don't want to perceive that there's only 7 sites that you really have to pay attention to, because the plant itself is an endangered, not species, but help me, it's an endangered plant.
Yeah. I mean, it's federally listed as threatened. And it's, so I'm not encouraging you to impact the plant. I'm just trying to provide some background on what the federal ESA says. Okay, so I do not want you to impact the plant at all. But some of you, you know, you have to do some work in the right of way. And what I'm trying to express is that if you, for example, were to impact just the plant, that would not be a violation of the federal ESA. Now, it might cause problems for the county and their HCP, okay, because, you know, they have certain responsibilities to manage for those areas. But so I just want to make that clear. I'm not saying you should go in there and impact the plant, or it's okay to impact the plant per se. I'm just saying you really need to pay attention more so to the butterfly, because you need a permit to impact the butterfly. You know, so, and I'm not gonna, you know, talk legal stuff or anything like that, but anyway, anytime you're working in a special maintenance zone, the least damage you could do to the plant, the better.
But any one of those 22 sites, we need consultation.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that too, but...
And actually, the county does have an obligation, and each of those 22 sites, if you harm or do damage to one of those lupin, then we have a mitigation factor that we also have to adhere to, which, frankly, will be passed right back down to your company, is why we're sitting here today.
Okay. Yes?
When we get a permit to work in the right-of-way, will these zones, is it the applicant's responsibility to identify this zone? And
I'll talk about that in a minute. Okay. And hopefully you'll agree. Because it's their permit. That's why I say that. So, I'm just going to read what it says.
We've had episodes. This isn't like, I mean, this thing's been going on for what, a couple of years. And I'll give you an example where a logger went up in one of the areas that did have a butterfly and made a loading dock or a loading zone for his timbers on that without any notification to the county. And, you know, those are the things that we really need to avoid at any cost. We've had off-road. We've had many times when we've had Rich here to investigate what happened in some of those areas. So, you know, I want to make sure that everyone here understands those 22 areas that are on there. We'll do everything we can to protect them, because we're under obligation to mitigate for those.
All so the other thing I wanted to mention is under the HCP, the county is responsible for those 22 sites currently. Now, that doesn't mean that in the future there might be 22 special maintenance zones that capture the Kincaid's Loop and Thunder's Butterflies. That doesn't mean in the future there might not be new locations of the lupin and or the butterfly, okay? So through the permitting process of the county and through our surveys, you will be hopefully notified of the presence of those butterflies and or lupin plants. The county is not currently under obligation under the HCP to create any new special maintenance zones, okay? But we, as we continue to survey, some sites may occur in the future outside of those zones.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, there is another HCP. This is going to confuse you a little bit. But Soil and Water, Yamhill County Soil and Water, is doing a private HCP as we speak. I think it's probably under review. So I would encourage you, if you're in any of those areas, and a lot of you probably will do drops for houses or right-of-way culverts and so on and so forth, I would encourage you to look into not only our right-of-way, but the public lands, because they very well could have signed up for the HCP, and if you are on the private land disturbing, it still becomes a federal issue.
Yeah, so basically, they're very different, but yeah, I'm only talking today about the county right-of-way part, okay, up to the fence, if there is a fence. Outside of that, that's a whole different situation, and I'm not really going to talk about it other than what John just said, that we're working with the Soil and Water Conservation District to have their own HCP, but in that case, you know, not all the locations have been identified, and how the impacts are addressed is different. So, but just to be aware that there is this HCP, and that there are lupin plants and Fenner's loop butterflies beyond the fence line. Okay, so next, I just this, you know, I'm sure you don't need to see most of this, but just want to point out that obviously, you know, this is where the action is as far as the plants and the lupin is concerned. I don't know, I don't know how many, and so I'm assuming some of the utility might be in this part, you know, so there's the ditch, and, you know, you might be buried there, might be buried in your shoulder, might be buried in, I think this is in the middle of the road, so we don't care so much about in the middle of the road, or typically this, because, you know, usually the plants aren't going to be there. In this case, sometimes, you know, the plants, as you saw in that one the picture, but the plant was right on the edge of the grading, okay? Okay, so here's one of the figures, and I just used the ones that have, well, some of these have fenders and, or have the lupin without the fenders, but I just want to show you what one looks like, and I'm going to go through several very quickly. And these are fairly easy to decipher. You know, here's the legend. You could figure this out. But what I wanted to show and talk about in particular is if you look at these, and some of these have been added on to, so it gets a little weird, but let's just, let me go to a simpler example. Okay, this is a good one. Okay, so the special maintenance zone, so we have some new ones and old ones. So this is an old one and this is a new one. Doesn't really matter. It just matters when they were determined to be. Notice, see that little dot right there? Little X right there, little X right there. Okay, so the special maintenance zones basically were established using the location of the lupin and then a half a kilometer either side of that lupin. Okay, so in this special maintenance zone, there are no lupin here. Okay, the only place looping occurs is there. Okay? So, in this case, and from here to here, there are no looping plants. Okay, there might be some butterflies. And remember before, we are particularly concerned about the looping, because it's a limiting factor. Again, from here to here, there might be one plant here, might be 10 plants, but there's no lupin plants between these two points, okay? So, and again, I'm trying to not encourage any impacts of any kind in the special maintenance zone. I'm trying to advise you on what's the most important part of the zone that you need to worry about as far as, you know, potential violations of the Federal ES Act, okay? So, if you were to do any, like if you were to do a pole replacement, if you were to do that pole replacement right here, I'm not usually going to be worried about it too much, okay? Because there's no loop. But as you get closer to this point right here, that's when I'm going to get a little worried about it, all right? So the other thing I wanted to point out, and I'm going to have to draw this because the scale isn't very good, but this is a dry erase. Okay, so let's say this is the road, and let's say, here's good color. Okay, so according to the map, you know, it shows an X. Okay, now that doesn't tell you the whole story, okay, because that X can be one plant, it could be 50 plants, okay, and it could be near the road, it could be way up, you know, almost to the outside of the right-of-way, and so depending upon where your activity are, you may be able to avoid impacting it if you actually go right through that point where the lupin is identified. The other thing is the special maintenance zone is both sides of the road, okay? But the lupin plants are not always going to be on both sides of the road, okay? So the butterflies are going to fly on both sides of the road because there's nectar plants for the adults everywhere, okay? So again, super critical. I will get nervous. If you're doing anything near that X, okay, I would want you to be as conservative as possible in impacting any of the vegetation anywhere in the zone, but around here, particularly concerned because of impacts to lupin and the butterfly. And this is where talking to the county and or talking to the Fish and Wildlife Service will help you avoid these impacts, because you know, we can tell you, oh, you're working on that side of the road, there's no lupin plants there, okay? But again, you know, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but you know, we don't want you to be impacting nectar plants either, okay? But there are times of the year when that's okay, because the larvae are, you know, basically at the ground level, they're just sort of, you know, hibernating. They're not, vegetation, above ground vegetation, you can go in there and impact that, you know, that it's dead or what have you. So there are times a year when it's not a problem to do work other than where that X is, because larvae are always going to be there, or the eggs or the butterfly.
But you always need consultation when you're working in those zones.
Yeah, I'm gonna still get to that. Okay.
You got me worried here, Rich.
No. Okay. So everyone understand that. All right. So and you can see these are all kinds of configurations. And some of them, you know, like this one has multiple, you know, there's two separate sites and then you don't have anything, then there's one right there. In this case, see, that's an example of where there's maybe a couple of plants in the right-of-way, but there's a whole bunch outside the right-of-way on private land. Okay, so that's what that is right there. And this site has a whole bunch of plants. That's where all those X's are. Okay, here's another example. So again, this is in the HCP, it's in the blue book. And I'm just gonna flip, here's an example. This is a patch that you don't, well, if you're operating on private land, then you gotta worry about it, but anyway. So they're located throughout the county. So let me ask you, any questions about interpreting these maps? Okay, and you can see what scale they're at. So it's, it, you know, if you're, I mean, because this is what I've done. I mean, if you drive down the road, you'll see the sign. You know, you'll know, I need to start looking, and then hopefully the sign is there, and you'll see it, okay? And also remember, these locations, that was, you know, 3 years ago, okay? Today, there might be one over there. Okay, but when you come for your permit, talk to the county, hopefully, and or talk to the Fish and Wildlife Service, hopefully we'll let you know that, okay? All right, what is that? Oh, it's a copy. Okay, so I mentioned about the half-kilometer buffer either side of typically where the lupin is occurring. So the intent of the HCP, okay, the half-kilometer buffer is there for two purposes. One is to really, you know, let people know that, okay, I'm beginning to get into an area where I need to be careful, okay? Secondly, we want the actual lupin to expand, okay? Because the butterfly is an endangered butterfly. Now, we're not really, you know, it's not the best place for a butterfly, because of the cars and whatnot, and because there is routine maintenance that has to occur in the right-of-way. But because the butterfly is in such trouble, we need to, you know, maintain them everywhere we can. So, you know, it's okay for, you know, this enhancing the habitat within the right-of-way. But it's not ideal. So I think I talked about most of this. So I'll just go to the next slide. So here we go. If possible, stay out of the special maintenance zone entirely. Okay. So some of you, that's not going to be possible. The other important point is some, like I've seen it, brush clearing or tree trimming. You know, you could use the bucket trucks. You don't have to drive onto the right of way. You can do that from the road. And so, you know, no equipment should be in that right of way in those special maintenance zones. No storage of anything in there either. If you're limbing, you know, don't, you know, have a pile of limbs there, anything like that. Just, you know, ideally just stay out of there any way you can. So, you know, again, I don't know if it'll come to this, but if anyone has buried utilities, you know, we might talk about directional boring underneath some areas as opposed to trenching. I don't know how expensive that is, but that would be an option that hopefully we could talk about if the need arises, okay? And then also, I briefly talked about this, but seasonal considerations. So from March, from March through August is really when the butterfly or its larva are actually going to be potentially active, okay? And so they might be feeding on the plant or the caterpillar, or the adult may be feeding on the plant or nectaring. Outside of that, you know, it's okay, and again, generally, if you need to do some vegetation treatment, because not of the lupin, but outside of that area, because you're not going to be impacting its food, okay, because they're not eating, okay? And so if you needed to do some work in the special maintenance zone, not impacting the lupin plant, you need to dig a trench, okay, that's potentially going to be okay so long as the trench doesn't go right through where the lupin is, okay? Now, it wouldn't be okay if you're doing that during this period of time, especially like May, June, because you might be removing some nectar sources for the adult. Okay, so do you understand that? So like, there's a seasonal thing where, you know, you might be affecting the food resource at other times of year, not an issue. Okay, but we could talk about that, you know, when the need arises for when you have your projects in the right way. Okay, so here is the county's permit application. I assume a lot of you have done this already, but I did want to point out two parts of it, okay? And it's probably hard for you to read, and you have probably excellent, but you'll see that it says, that, you know, the county will determine whether or not your activity occurs within these protected areas, okay? So right from the get-go, you don't necessarily have to know. The county will hopefully tell you when you submit your application. And so if it's going to impact the lupin and or butterfly, you're going to need to talk to us, or fish monitors, I should say, sorry. Hopefully that, you know, the county can maybe work with you to figure out a way of doing it differently to avoid the impacts. But the county will let you know up front whether or not you're in the special maintenance zone and whether or not there might be impacts to those species. Hopefully you can avoid it. You know, you can read that later on. Yeah, go ahead.
Does the county currently have these zones cataloged in the form of mileposts in some way? And right now when we apply for a permit, we just indicate basically township range section. Where we're going to be working. Is it going to be completely under the auspices of the county? Do I have to declare that where we're working is going to be in a zone? Or will we perhaps have to indicate what the milepost is, for example, of where we're working if the county has identified these zones?
Can you answer that?
Well, Bill, he's right. They apply with township and range. I have not seen a time when Bill Anderson, who's the permit specialist, would y'all deal with that? Not seen a time where he doesn't know exactly where you're going to be. Who asked that? Okay. Where you're going to be, even though you aren't identifying mileposts.
Number one, we don't have mileposts.
Okay.
So.
Right. So I don't think there's any reason to have any concern about doing it any differently than you have been. A lot of you give us actual addresses. And he's been here forever, and he knows it. If he doesn't, he goes and looks.
What about a Latin long? Kind of like when you call the locates and whatnot, sometimes you give a Latin long location.
Well, he can pull it up on GIS and see where you're at. Okay. You know, as Catherine stated, Yamhill County is still an ag community. I mean, we're not Washington County. Most of the time, you know Bill Anderson, our specialist, but Bill has many hats. That's not the only thing Bill does. Most of the time, if you told him an address, it was on XYZ Road, he can probably tell you the color of the house. So for right now, it's probably going to be simplified that going forward as the Yamhill County grows and whatnot. We'll probably have to implement something that's a little more 21st century.
I was going to ask Long's brother Peter.
Longer than me, that's all I care about. You know, we will, and that is an excellent, we will, going forward, we will, as technology improves, as I said, we've implemented it on our machinery. Every one of our machines has a Trimble system on it. I can tell you where he's at, any one machine today, there's a beep that goes off when he enters these zones. You know, hypothetically, each one of you, PGE and so on, that do a lot of work in those sensitive areas would implement some kind of technology that would say, stop, we need to do something a little different here or something, you know.
Okay, so anyway, read that. It's important stuff. All right, so I just want to go over a couple little examples of situations. So you saw this picture before. One thing that you might need to do for some reason is do some work on some trees, for example. And usually, I guess you probably trim the trees. But let's say for some reason you want to remove the whole tree. Trimming the tree, probably not a problem in 99% of the cases, okay? Because you could do it with the bucket truck, off the road, on the road, small branches, you're not going to disturb the soil. But now in this case, this is the only one I had, so if you, right here, there's a lupin plant, okay? So it's impossible, almost impossible, to remove this without disturbing this lupin plant, okay? So potentially, if you need to remove that shrub, you might need a permit from us, okay? Now this does not happen very often at all. I'm just showing you, a potential situation that is possible.
And Rich, I've seen this, and I want to emphasize again, even foot traffic in those areas in the sensitive months that he's talking about, April, May, June, is not good for the species. So we're trying to even avoid foot traffic. So the people that are out there cutting the vegetation away from the lines and so on and so forth, as long as you don't have a lot of activity, and as Rich says, some of it, if you can reach with the boom truck and bring it to the roadway, probably is not an issue. But, I think we both know that there's a lot of foot traffic in that right away, picking up branches and whatnot. So we have to be sensitive even to that, to that level of disturbing those areas.
All right. So again, having all of you are aware of this, but let's just say this was identified as a special maintenance zone. So again, looking on the map, you're in the zone, and the X is it's in the middle of the road. Well, in this particular case, there is a lupin plant in here. Okay, now most people would not be able to see it, even if you're looking. I spent time looking for it, okay? And I'll show you a picture of it. But anyway, so if any of your equipment, is on this line, even though you're in the maintenance zone, okay, you have a mowed lawn here, a driveway, probably a mowed lawn here, there's no lupin here, it's all, non-native grass, we're not going to worry about it. It's not going to be a problem, okay, I'll just say. However, if for some reason you were working in here, then it might be an issue, okay? So you might look out, or you might have to do some extra work. Yes?
So in that, with us doing the roadside spraying, are these areas going to be removed from our spray maps completely?
And who were you with?
Akron Vegetation Management, who does the roadside spraying in May every year.
For who? For us?
For the county.
Well, for you changed your name from Washburn now.
Yes, Washburn is no longer.
Okay. Those sites are identified on your computer system,
perfect,
too, that when you enter into them, your system actually tells you no.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, you can spray at certain times of the year, but...
Not what she's spraying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and we could talk about that at some point in the future if you're interested.
Sure, that's like one of the roads that we would have sprayed. And
right.
I want to make sure that those are being removed from our area.
And you have the data.
Perfect.
In your system will alert you that you're in that system.
Excellent.
Going back to your last slide on a gravel road where you've got vegetation and you have lupins. What's the county stance on allowing a communication cable to be plowed in the road as opposed to on the shoulder?
Is it a gravel road?
Yeah, we're talking gravel roads here.
I don't want you tearing up my asshole.
Yes. We don't want to tear it up.
To be honest with you, and I'm going to show my, I've only been in public works for about 6 years. I personally would not have a problem with it if it was maintained to a depth of 30 inches or maybe even just a little bit more.
We can go up to 42, so.
Yeah. As you well know, though, I mean, it would have to be, I'd be very cautious because most of your trenches aren't anywhere near that. In fact, with just general maintenance, we're hitting a lot of your wires for
sure.
the in those zones, I would probably, there would be no issue about doing it the road, and thus you would probably not have to go through consultation, although we would probably consult with Rich's department. But that's not a bad idea.
Great, thanks.
Excellent idea.
I like it too.
It's not too expensive. Okay. All right, so I was just going to say, so you can see that, you know, the BlackBerry line there. And so, I don't know, it's not the best photo, but there is a lumen plant in there. And see, I can't even remember where the heck it is now. And it's not in flower. It's sort of right in the middle someplace. But this is why we're not going to rely on you to find the plant. Because it's not always going to be easy. Anyway, so there is the telltale seed pods of the lupin plant. And there you can see the leaves. Anyway, sometimes they could really be very... Now, we don't really like... This is lousy habitat. I don't think there's any butterflies here. You know? So we wouldn't mind some spraying to kill all this native grass. But we're working with the county to deal with that. Mowing too, you know, that'll address it.
But mowing at the right time.
Yeah, yes.
And actually spread the seed and cause the lupin to propagate. So mowing at, we'll take care of the mowing.
Yeah. Okay, so I've said this previously, but in working with the county and depending upon the time of the year, et cetera, et cetera, it is theoretically possible that you might need a permit from us because, as I mentioned earlier, the HCP provides a permit to the county, but not to anybody else. Okay?
And as I said, we are the ultimate held responsible for your action in our right of way. That's why I was concerned of her.
Yeah, so I think, you know, John mentioned previously that the county, you know, is to maintain these areas and they need, so we're counting on that. And if an action were to eliminate some habitat, it needs to be replaced. And so the county would have to do it or have you do it. Yes?
You know, it seems like there's a little bit of a disconnect with what you're just saying, Mark, because you say ultimately the county would be held responsible, but we don't fall under the county's permit. There's something...
I don't understand.
There's something that doesn't...
You do not follow under a permit.
Yeah, I'll distinguish between the permit versus impacting the habitat without resulting in harm to the butterfly. Okay, so the permit is specifically for harm to the butterfly. Okay, the county has a permit for that. None of you do. Okay, that's one thing. If you impact the habitat, whether or not you need a permit, okay, if it occurs in the right-of-way in a special maintenance zone, the county is supposed to be maintaining so much habitat under the HCP. Okay, so if something happens that the county does or anybody else does, the HCP says the county will... have this much habitat on the ground. And so that's, I think, maybe the distinction. They're responsible for so much habitat. They have a permit to pay the federally listed, you know, vendors, but you don't have the permit for that. So you're responsible for the take. The county's responsible for the habitat because it's county, you know, easement, right? So you, but the county can potentially make you fix the habitat, you know, as part of access to the right of way, and also because they're responsible for it in the HCP. Does that maybe clear that up or
somewhat?
Oh,
well, so the county has a permit that has nothing to do with this.
That's correct.
Either you or the federal government. So that's the permit that you're.
Yeah, it's
you're
a totally separate permit. Right. Yeah, that's your permit to do work on their property. In their easement.
I think that's the confusion, though, is that you've got a whole different permit with him that we don't have anything to do with, that you're, that you have to answer to, and if our work impacts that, it's still coming back.
That's a good way of explaining it, I guess. There is actually, as I said earlier, a mitigation factor on that, too. I think, I believe it's 3-1, so PGE goes out, puts a pole in, and they determine they disturbed 6 plants. We have to mitigate 18 plants at another location or on that site.
But another question then, we got a power line going through, we got a pole right in the middle of one of these areas, say, existing. Car going to buy snacks, and we have to go in the middle of the night and replace it.
And yeah, that's ritual to address that emergency action.
So since you brought it up, you can quote me on this, okay? Because I don't, you know, because people have, I'll say, pretended I never said this, but I will say it, that if an emergency occurs, you know, that involves, you know, life, property, safety, whatever, something like that, power outage, you know, you need to go in there and do what you need to do, okay? You're not going to be held responsible for any impacts to listed species. However, you might be responsible for, like, restoring the habitat afterward, but you're not going to need a federal permit because you, you know, impacted the fetus with butterfly. Okay? So everyone understand that? If it's an emergency, whatever it is, you know, power outage, broken pipeline, you know, I don't know.
Damaged fibers.
What? Well, I suppose maybe if someone, well, the only way that would happen is if someone was already doing something like digging or whatever, right?
Right.
Or if a tree, you know, falls down the line, whatever. But okay, so just remember, if it has to be done, you know, because of an emergency, that's not what we're talking. You know, that's okay. Okay, we understand that you need to go in there and do it.
But let me emphasize, if emergency does not constitute your lack of planning. You need, if you're going to be in these areas, you need to have a forward-looking plan that applies to the county, and if need be, that there's consultation done with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. You know, the type of emergency, and then 2 weeks later the crew's out fixing it, that's not going to be acceptable.
Sometimes you do a temporary check.
And that's exactly what we're referring to. Emergency, as Rich said, is something that has an impact to the public. It needs to be fixed immediately. It might be a situation where you just simply band-aid it until you can have consultation. It is not as difficult as bureaucracy that you would think. It's a simple phone call to Rich's department. I'm working here. Here's my longitude, latitude. This is my situation. He can do it over the phone within hours.
Well, so long as it is an emergency, yes. If it's not an emergency, then the other thing I want to mention is if you really do need a permit, now hopefully a lot of the stuff, like you're putting in a new cable down the middle of the road, you know, you don't just say, let's do that tomorrow. Okay, you're going to take some time and you know, figure that all out and hire someone to do it or whatever. So that's, you know, there's a lot of planning involved, and so hopefully, you know, that one's not going to impact the species. But for some of the stuff, you're going to put in a new line, okay? And it's going to go through the special maintenance zone. You know, you should be talking to the county and potentially Fish and Wildlife Service right when you're deciding we need to put in a new line. Not when the truck is out there, you know, cutting the trench and then hits the sign and say, oh, there's an SMZ here. I guess we need to stop and talk to the county or the Fish and Wildlife Service. That would not be a good thing. A permit is not a short process. Okay, if you need a permit, you know, it could take at least 6 to 9 months. Okay, unfortunately, because there's a lot of steps involved. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. So if you do have some big project in mind. You know, you should talk to, and it's going to impact the special maintenance zone in such a way that it might impact the lupin and or the butterfly. You need to talk to the county and or us as soon as you can. And my point today was to hopefully avoid, provide you with the information so you avoid needing that permit, okay? Because otherwise, you know, it's 6 to 9 months at least, and, you know, a lot of work on both our parts. So if we can avoid it, I think that will work out better for everybody. So early coordination is the key, and I talked about the emergency actions already. So I think that's it. There's my contact information. Anyway, was this scheduled for an hour? How long is this? Because it's really like an hour and a half.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm sorry to take so long.
There's a lot of good information.
Yeah. So any questions, you can call me, talk to me anytime you want. Yeah, go ahead.
Could you define impact looping a little bit more? I mean, and I know if we get a permit in the area, we're going to have a consultation and that kind of stuff, but more for our planning, take 6 to 9 months for a permit. Kind of need to, if we're walking on a plant, is that impacting it? If we're, you walk on it and it happens to die because it gets covered up by other material, or is it just excavating, or what exactly would be considered impacting the plant?
Well, if you actually walked on the plant, that would be an impact.
Okay.
So hopefully you know where those, rough about where the plants might be, and you would, you know, just walk around it. I mean, the plants are not that big. You know, individual plants are not that big. You should not need to walk.
Right, but as you said, we won't necessarily, you know,
we don't have
plant specialists
out there. No, I know. So what I'm saying is, you know, if that's a potential issue, then hopefully the county will let you know that it's a potential issue, and they could either direct you on how to avoid that situation and or, you know, talk to the Fish and Wildlife Service, probably me, but maybe not. And then, you know, I'd be glad to come out and, you know, tell you what to do to avoid impacting the plant, okay? So so it's real critical while the plant's, you know, a lot. It's green, you know. I mean, it's always there. It's a perennial plant. So it dies off, but the caterpillars are still there sitting at the bottom, okay? So, you know, anyway, if the plant is green, you need to avoid impacting them as best you can. And hopefully most people can do that.
But can I make a... 6 to 9 months for you to change a pullout, I don't think is what we're looking at. We're looking at major projects where you're going to trench right through one of these special zones. You need to be forward enough to come in here a year early and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we need some consultation. If you have a pull down or going to replace it, you should have enough forward looking to say, well, I'm going to replace that pull next year. If you don't, though, it is not one of those things that would require 6 to 9 months. We would be understanding of that. More than likely, we would send an expert out with you, identify the area, have some discussion with Rich about it, cordon off what you can, activity you can do and what at that area, and allow you to do that. But, you know, I would hope those are few and far between, because I would hope you're looking ahead far enough that we would never or not have to enter into those. But life goes on. It will happen.
What if you identify a lupin outside one of the special zones? What's the procedure for that?
Let the county know and or Fish and Wildlife Service so we could determine whether that's a complete lupin. And then, you know, we'll... decide what to do from there. So, as far as you potentially impacting it, you know, the odds are, if you know, it's possible that there's going to be lupin outside of the special Kincaid's lupin, but it's sort of it'd be very unlikely, but it is possible. So, and it would be great. actually to find some more. You know, it's going to be a case-by-case situation. I think as John was trying to point out, you know, we will try and figure something out to allow you to get the work done, but there are times when, unfortunately, you actually might need a permit from us. So. Yeah, go ahead.
So aren't there other sensitive areas that you guys have identified that are outside the county right-of-way?
There are, but that's, I'm not talking about that today.
How do we gain access to that information if that's a liability that we're going to have?
Okay.
Being on private property.
Right, right. So I guess one way would just be to call our office up. We do have on our website for our office, and I don't, if you go to like, you know, fws.gov, I don't know what our office's website is, but if you go to Oregon and, you know, our office in Portland, if you get to our website, then there's a, I think, you can click on whether or not the species occurs in that, at least county, maybe even a smaller area, so to at least let you know you need to be concerned about it.
Are those areas marked as well? Or
No. Oh, no.
But they will be once the HCP is
completed. Well, the right-of-way stuff. Well, even, I don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, the thing is, for Yamhill County, it's pretty much going to be fenders to butterfly as far as animals are concerned. And Kincaid's lupin. There's some other listed plants that occur here, too. But you could potentially impact those without.
Yeah, as far as private work, Amy.
Loop Friesen.
Loop Friesen?
Loop dash Friesen.
Okay. With Soil and Water is doing that. I believe it's under public review right now, is not?
Yeah, so the other HCP that's being worked on by the SWCD, so they've done some surveys, but, you know, because it's private land, they only do surveys when people allow them to do surveys. So there's many, many private landowners that have not allowed surveys to be done. So you can't say that the species isn't there because no one's logged. But we do know some locations based on all, you know, the allowance of those surveys. Yes, go ahead.
I've got a question about the 6 to 9 months permit. So I can understand when you're looking to projects, replacing main lines, big projects. When you have a little project as replacing a line to a customer, just a single line, they will go through that. But 6 to 9 months, can this be looking into emergency? When you're going to replace a drop to a house and you're looking at 6 to 9 months, if I'm going to go through that, what is your opinion about looking into that, and how can we avoid the 6 to 9 months? Because we're talking about a customer that needs a new line.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a major project. It's just a drop, a simple line that needs to go through that. Nobody's going to wait 9 months to get any service.
No, they will if they have to, if we can't.
I'm
sorry, but
all I can say
is there a way to work around the 9 months? I mean, can we meet on site and find a way to avoid?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, if there is a potential impact, then, you know, then you need to talk to Fish and Wildlife Service to try to come up with a way to avoid it, especially if you can't look ahead. You know.
Correct. You don't look ahead. You got a customer that wants to mark a service,
yeah,
and you need to bury a new line that will go through this.
Right.
So he's going to start complaining, I don't have 911, I cannot do this, I cannot do that.
Yeah.
Is this an emergency?
Just blame it on the county.
Correct. So we're like,
yeah, the answer,
sorry,
that,
we don't want to blame on you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like when you guys are doing this for me, we don't have the permit yet.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, and so that's, we would hope to be able to figure something out, ways of avoiding it. But there's no way that you can get a permit in less than that time. It is impossible. Okay.
But
it's actual permit.
Now, but if I come with you over there and I find a way to go,
yeah,
are you gonna okay with that? If I find a way to go around, if I don't right through, so I can understand the importance that you don't want me to detour, but if I find a way to go around that,
or depending on where you're at, you know, you might be able to dig through or directionally bore a short distance. Because the right of way, it's only like 20 feet wide.
Right.
You know. So, or 30.
I mean, I got to figure my answer for the questions that I have.
We have been very cooperative with the last 2 years that this has been implemented. And I'll give you an example. There was a logger on Oak Ridge in one of the more productive zones that needed an access to his timberland. Ridge came out. I went up there. We looked at it and talked to the landowner and the logger. Within 2 days, he was putting the approach in and going to it. So there is, you know, we're not encouraging it, but there's going to be those situations that we all have to work together and get it done. You know, I think Ridge is 6 to 9 months. We're talking major projects where you're going to replace the whole line or you're going to ditch the whole length of the special maintenance zone. Accidents, again, you know, fix what you need if it's in life and liberty and everything else is threatened. But, you know, we can work with Rich, and he's been here in his department, and it has been in the last 2 years. We have obtained those right-of-way issues fairly quickly.
So just to adjust something John just said, it doesn't have to be a big project. It can be one box, you know, whatever those things are called. Boxes along, you know, where they hook up all the wires. it could be one box. If it's in the wrong place at the wrong time, then you might need a permit. Okay. But hopefully you can move the box 5 feet over, and then it's not an issue. I mean, it could be something as simple as that. For example,
like the box is where is it right now, and there's an issue for me to move it over. I might need a 6 to 8 months permit to move it over.
Yeah.
Not to be an issue.
Yeah. So right, I'm saying it again. It doesn't have to be a big project. If it's a small project and located in the wrong spot, you know, then you still might need a permit, and I cannot make it any shorter than that if you really need a permit. But you know, we would work with you. There's some things we can do, I'll just say, that you might not need a permit, okay? But I, you know, it'd be a case-by-case basis, and it would typically be something smaller, like what you're talking about.
So then are you guys
going
to talk to the customers if they, you know, if we explain it's going to take 6 to 9 months, and they say that they don't want to wait, does that mean that you'll... they can call you guys and you can explain the situation to them?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, we deal with that all the
time. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get fired up.
No, they should call us. They shouldn't be talking. I mean, it's great that you might let them know, but no, that's unfortunately what, you know, we have to deal with sometimes. Yeah, go ahead.
And so there is still liability or potential for fine by impacting the butterfly or the lupin outside of these restricted use areas, outside of the identified areas. Like
within the right of way?
No, outside of the
right
of way.
Yeah, Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's federally listed, not just in our right of way.
Yeah, so I showed you, you know, so like, you know, this one right there.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, 200 feet off the road right there,
mm-hmm.
that's butterfly habitat. This you know, this one right here, that's a big chunk of good habitat. That's actually could be even what we designated as critical habitat.
So that's all gain access or information from you guys as far as identifying those other locations.
Other known locations.
Right.
So, well, you know, we only know what we know, so, but that's, you know, it's in these maps, and again, these, if you look at all, look at this okay, this is, these maps are generated based on the location of the roads and where the Lupinian or Butterfly is. But if you were operating right there, okay, there could be lupin plants there and butterflies there off the road. It's not in this document.
And more than likely are.
Yeah.
In most cases, that is the.
So yeah, this is in everything, by the way. And so yeah, if you have any questions, if you run into lupin, you know, I mean, the main thing is we want to get this species off the endangered species list. Okay, we want to work with landowners to maintain habitat or create more habitat. You know, we're not out to try and, you know, get people in trouble or fine people or whatever. You know, we want to avoid that at all costs, because what good does that do for the butterfly? It's you know, it's the opposite thing. We want to work with people to avoid, maintain, restore. And if we can work that out with people, that's great.
Okay, yeah. Can you clarify the consultation process a little bit as far as, you know, so any job that occurs within a maintenance zone, so say it's a pole replacement for PGE, the county's permit says we will consult with Fish and Wildlife Service before getting a county permit. Do you want to be consulted on any job, no matter what the size, that occurs within these maintenance zones? Or do you want, I mean, you've several times said, talk to me and or the county. So should we hash it out with the county first to determine if we're going to have an impact or not? Or does the county want us to consult? There's a little bit of, you know, it's not really clear how that consultation works.
No, as far as the county stands on it, anytime you're doing any work in any one of those areas, we will have you consult with U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. And I'm usually readily available, and hopefully it's not like we're out there ready to work, you know. Because I've gotten calls from people that were actually on the road, you know, saying, oh, we're clearing and we're about to hit the special maintenance zone. What do we do? You know, it's like, then I have to ask them a bunch of questions. And they go, well, how far are you going? What exactly are you doing? This is what you should do or should not do. So far we've been lucky because it's been simple stuff. Like tree trimming, that's a relatively simple thing. Most of the time that's not an issue. In some cases we encourage it because the king robin doesn't like shade. So, you know, removing the trees in some of the areas would even be good then too. But yeah, so definitely, you know, we would want to go over the specifics with you to avoid the impact. And in some cases, your potential impact to the area might actually be a good thing for the butterfly, either directly or after. Okay.
There you go. Well, I appreciate all of you coming.
Yeah, I thank you too.
And, you know, there is others that need to get the word out to, so I appreciate it, too, if you would tell your peers and or loggers and or excavators and that type of people that would have a potential impact on these areas. We did tape this conversation today. If you need a copy of that or whatnot, Catherine will be posted on our webpage, correct?
I can. Mm-hmm.
Is the blue book available?
It is. You know, frankly, the blue book started out, it is our working document that we give to our employees, and it's in every vehicle we own, so that if they come upon this, they can look at it and see what the choices are. Catherine?
I can make copies if you want me to, but we don't have copies available to distribute.
I can contact you after. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the maps, you know, both these maps in the blue book, and then maybe these were handed out already, but this is just a basic county map with these zones. But it's such a scale, you can barely even see some of them. I'm mean, those are the most important things.
Exactly.
If you want more information about how the special maintenance zones are to be managed and more information about the species, then you should just get the HCP, which is available online. That has a lot more detail. This is
online
a working document for the county to, you know,
online to Yamhill County's website.
You have to navigate from from Yamhill County's website to the drop down for Public Works to, on the right side it says what's new.
Or I can call you.
Are you
call them? It's on our website too. It's hopefully readily available. And if you have any questions, you know, talk to the county first, and then, I mean, you can call me anytime, it doesn't matter, but I guess it's the county's right of way, you know, you need to talk to them first. Because most of the time you probably won't need to talk to them.
Do you have a picture of your warning sign on your website?
Yes.
We could print out and
on the website.
Well, it's in the HCP.
It's in the blue book too.
There.
I can make
or
it public.
I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. It's bigger than that though.
Yeah, I think it's about 14.4.
It's got it's coded message, by the way. So, but
and
this explains
the code that, tells you what you can do when.
Well, code's basically I mean, that there's instructions. If this thing is checked, then this is the restriction.
There's a legend on the side of that. That's pretty different.
Yeah, like no brushing, you know, BM, no mowing, S, no spraying.
So if you as a landowner come in and you file that you don't want your land sprayed, we'll put one of those up, but it'll have different markings and that's sensitive.
So those aren't always warning for what we talked about today.
Correct. Yeah, they're not just for the sensitive. They weren't made for, you know, actually, I'm wrong. We did go back and we did put up a sign. We did put there about